All right, everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast. I'm your host, Evan Davidson. With me, as always, my co-host, Bruce Gunther. Bruce, how are things?
Good evening, everybody. Good. A little tired tonight, but good.
Well, probably from all that hockey today.
No, putting together lawn furniture.
Oh, fair enough. I watched a lot of hockey today. I was just sitting on the deck watching hockey, so.
Well, I've been outside almost all day the last 2 days, so.
Well, it was gorgeous, so take advantage, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The NHL sure started things off with a bang this week with the playoffs back-to-back-to-back on Sunday.
And Washington
on Saturday. But yeah, like, what a day. No shortage of good hockey to watch.
No, absolutely. Three of the four games go to overtime, and the fourth one came darn close to going to overtime. So that's
just about,
that's some great stuff. That's what you want.
Well, I guess let's jump off there. I had some other stuff, from the week, but let's talk about, I want to talk about the Tampa Florida game. Cause that, to me, I think that's the most intriguing series of the playoffs in this first round. What do you think?
The Battle of Florida. Absolutely. I think everyone since Florida came into the league has been waiting for this, right?
And yeah,
now we've got it, and it isn't disappointing. That's for sure.
Well, at a time when both teams are playing so well, and surprising is that Florida actually finished ahead of Tampa in the standings.
I know. Hey, who thought that, right? No, it's great. Was listening to an interview with Sam Bennett, and he said, some of the games that they had played against each other in the regular season was almost to the caliber of the Battle of Alberta games between Calgary and Edmonton. So that says something. They've got something brewing there. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, it looked like it again tonight, right? Like an ultra-competitive game. Both teams really wanted to win that one. It was nice to see the fans in the stands, right? It was a welcome change from the artificial crowd noise that we've been so used to over the past year, having actual fans there.
Florida could win the attendance race this year.
Oh, that's so strange. What a year.
I know.
Well, anyway, tonight, Braden Point, he played hero with the game-winning goal with, I think it was just over a minute left. He had two goals in the night in a 5-4 regulation win over the Panthers. Just as big a story, I think, is Nikita Kucherov coming back from injury after having missed the entire season, comes out with two goals and an assist. And 19:21 of ice time. So what are your thoughts on Kucherov?
So Kucherov took a 56 game vacation, comes back with no rust. And I don't know if he was actually hurt as much as they actually said he was.
Yeah. Like, who knows?
But then it's Kucherov too, right? This guy he's good. He's really good, right?
Well, so, he's a world-class hockey player. Like he's one of the, I would say probably top five players in the league right now.
Like easily.
Right after McKinnon, Connor, Leon.
He's right up there, right?
Like, he's incredible. So, we'll get into picks later. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. But anyway, yeah, so great game there tonight. I guess the Minnesota Wild, they go up 1-0 after Joel Eriksson X OT winner. Another good game, right? That was kind of a goaltending duel today.
Yeah, absolutely. I was watching I didn't catch the game, but I watched some of the highlights, and basically Minnesota got lucky with a bounce and he put it in the net, and that was the only way they were winning because Marc-Andre Fleury and Cam Talbot were incredible.
Yeah.
Some of the saves they made were just nuts. Like it's,
well, as a couple of Oilers fans, I think we were both probably excited for Cam Talbot today, right? Like that's
absolutely,
that's good for him.
It's good to see him back in there again. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and to battle it out with Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, did you see that save that Fleury made today?
The behind the back one?
Kaprizov on? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
I had to go to, I had to find a bigger screen to look it on because I couldn't believe he got around to get that. It's like, holy crap. And it's like, because Kaprizov made it.
Yeah. I was going to say, Kaprizov made a nice move to even make that happen.
Oh, that was a beautiful move. And yeah, he just got absolutely robbed. It was
like, man, so okay, Marc-Andre Fleury, let's talk about him for a second, right? Like we mentioned him last week on the podcast, third all time in wins for goalies. Yeah. Is he the best goaltender in the game right now or top three? Like where do you put Marc-Andre Fleury?
He's in the top three. I'd be hard pressed to bump Vasilevskiy off of number one, but Gosh, you look at today's performance. He makes a hell of a case, doesn't he?
He sure does. Yeah, he's no worse than the third best, I think. Right?
Exactly. Right. So, I read somewhere today that his numbers this year were just off his career best.
Yeah.
That says something, right? Because Fleury's what, 33?
I thought he was 35. He's 35? Up there, right? Like he's not a spring chicken anymore.
Marc-Andre Fleury. He is 36.
There you go.
So it's funny.
It's kind of been a renaissance year for a couple older goaltenders, right? Marc-Andre Fleury and Mike Smith.
Yeah.
Both winding back the clock. Yeah. So that's cool to see.
I'm thinking Marc-Andre Fleury took the Robin Leonard trade personally.
I would agree. I think part of that played into his performance this year.
Yeah, I think so. And then when Leonard missed the part of the season for surgery and then the concussion, he solidified why he's one of the best in the game, right? And after today, it's like, wow.
He's been a pleasure to watch all season long. And he made just save after save after save today. He looked incredible. The Wild are going to be in tough to win that one, but we'll see. Should be an entertaining series.
It's going to be one heck of a series. Absolutely.
The other game today, I want to talk about was the Islanders taking a 1-0 series lead after Kyle Palmieri scored his OT winner, and that was his second goal of the day. So I have to think Lou Lamoriello is pretty pleased with himself after bringing in Palmieri. What do you think?
Absolutely, right? So in the regular season, he didn't do too much, right? So it's
pretty quiet.
But gets into the playoffs and he puts two goals in.
Well, he's probably just happy he can grow his beard back.
does the rule come off for the playoffs?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it does?
So that's okay. Jordan Eberle actually made mention of that. I think I saw it on Twitter, but he just said, you know what? I really look forward to that time of the year I can grow my beard back. And not that he walks around with a beard all the time, but he just knows it's playoff time and Lou Lamoriello lets that rule slide. So I think that's good.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. No, it's shows why he went out and got him, right?
He's a good player. He's more consistent than not. It was kind of odd to see him not putting up any points, adjusting to a new team, I guess, but
yeah.
I would think next year he'll probably get back to his regular self.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, this is just an odd year for everybody, right? So
yeah.
Also too in that game, how about Sorokin? Is that his?
Ilya Sorokin.
Like, hell of a performance by the rookie. Like, wow.
Well, I was kind of taken back by the fact that he even started, right? I fully expected Varlamov to be in net. They said he was the guy that was in the starter's net all week in practice. And I guess he wasn't well enough to go, so they went with Sorokin.
He played awfully well.
He sure did. In other news, Capitals, they won their first game of the series after an OT winner by Nick Dowd. So like you'd mentioned, three of the first four games went to overtime. It seems to be a recurring theme in the playoffs, right? I don't know why, but teams are just playing a little bit tighter and more games seem to go in overtime. But it makes for entertaining hockey, nonetheless.
Yeah. Everything tightens up, right? So there's not as much space out there that everyone got during the regular season. Everyone's just playing harder. There's more hits. There's more physical contact. It's goaltenders raise their game too. So it's...
Yep.
You're not going to see too many blowouts. If you do, it's because someone's having a bad night.
It's to be unexpected for sure. I guess we'll move away from the playoffs just a little bit here because there was some other things that happened throughout the week that I think are both NHL relevant and fantasy relevant. The big one for me is Jack Eichel noting a disconnect with the Sabres, and there's some speculation now and rumors, rolling around that he may be headed out of town for next season. So. I guess the big rumor we're hearing right now, according to Elliot Friedman anyway, is that the most likely destination would be the New York Rangers. So what are your thoughts on that?
That could be interesting. That's
him and Panarin together? What do you think?
Oh, my. I would be very scared. would be very scared. The question is, who are the Rangers going to – who would they offer up for Eichel, right?
Well, they talked, part of that whole discussion was right now they've got Zibanejad as their number one center, followed by Ryan Strome in the 2C role. You know, if I'm the Rangers, I'd love to keep Zibanejad and then add Jack Eichel, right? You don't want to have to part with Zibanejad to make that trade. Yeah. So you've got some depth on the wings, I guess. Like, are you going to trade a guy like Lafreniere or Kaapo Kakko? You don't want to, but for Jack Eichel, you might consider making that move, right?
Yeah. I've been listening to the news about the disconnect and stuff like that. And yeah, they're having a disagreement over, it sounds like he wants surgery and a different type of surgery, I guess. And
yeah,
something that's never been done on an NHL player before. It sounds like it's been done on a couple of MMA fighters. So one has been back in the ring since then, and he's fully recovered. He actually apparently does a testimonial for the surgery.
Oh, okay.
And the second one, I think, is recovering right now. He hasn't made it back to the ring yet, but he's basically saying the same thing. So,
well, I heard that same story, and that's kind of the issue, right? Like, Eichel wants to make sure he's fully healthy, and then he gets looked after, and the Sabres are kind of like, well, if there's a chance you're not going to play again, we don't want you to get the surgery.
Yeah. And then, who was it? So he had neck fusion surgery, right? And he went on to play eight or nine more seasons in the NHL with neck fusion surgery too. He wasn't the player level that Eichel was, but so there's,
but I guess still there's a case, work, right?
Case going either way, right? So
yeah,
I can see why Eichel would want the replacement surgery, because when you fusing the vertebrae, it limits your neck mobility, right? Where if you're just replacing the disc, you in theory shouldn't lose any mobility or turning radius in your neck. You should be able to be basically back to normal once everything is all healed up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, being a center and being a gifted player, like, any player, really, you need mobility, right? Yeah. You need to be able to swivel, keep your head in a swivel and see the ice. So, yeah, interesting. We'll see where that goes.
I guess it'll come down to, right, so Kevin Adams says he wants to go forward with the players that want to be there. So I guess it depends on how badly Eichel wants to be there. If he's not on board.
Yeah.
Fair comment, right?
I think any employer would say something similar, right? We want people who want to be here.
I don't think Kevin Adams is going to be hurt at all if Eichel says he doesn't want to be there anymore.
Well, he'll get a great return for him, right?
Yeah. And then you wonder about some other players like Bennett, Ristolainen. Some of those guys are going to want to change too, right? So Bennett showed this year he can put up points on the board without Eichel, right? So that looks good. So yeah, we'll see. It's going to be another interesting summer in Buffalo.
like every year, right? It's like Groundhog Day over there.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Just one other note on this topic. Elliot Friedman had mentioned that aside from the Rangers, it sounds like LA could do it, Anaheim could do it, Ottawa, Montreal, St. Louis, Boston wants to, and Columbus as well. So there's going to be lots of teams looking at this realistically. Yeah. There's probably only a few that can actually pull it off. But
does Eichel have a no trade clause?
Another good question. I'm not sure. I would guess he does. Or it might be a limited no move kind of thing. Like, you might be able to submit a list of 10 teams.
Find out in a second. Jack Eichel. He has nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Me too. No, he's got nothing.
Okay. Well, then it really could get interesting this summer.
Yeah, because I could see his preferred destination out of that group would be the Rangers, right? Because they're probably the team that should have been in the playoffs, just other than who they had in their division, right? So they're a playoff ready team. Anaheim is nowhere close. Right. St. Louis is there, but if they're trading for Eichel and looking at the team, I don't know how much of that team's going to return next year.
I don't know. I don't see that one panning out, but.
Yeah.
I mean, Elliot Friedman knows more than I do, so.
A lot more than I do. That's why I listen to his podcast.
Exactly. I should have mentioned this earlier, but Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Leonard won the William M. Jennings Trophy as the goalie tandem that allowed the fewest goals in the NHL this season. So hats off to those guys. Fleury finished the regular season with a 26-10-0 record with a 1.98 goals against average and 928 save percentage. He also had six shutouts, with which paced the league or close to. I think Varlamov had tops in the league this year at seven, I believe, or if I'm correct. Leonard went 13-4-2 in 19 starts with a 2.29 goals against average and a 913 save percentage and one shutout. So I would say next year, that's another tandem. I mean, I got them in Yahoo, right? Yeah. That panned out well for me. You had them in ESPN, correct?
Yeah, I did.
So I would highly recommend. I think you finished third this year in ESPN, right? So
yeah, I did.
You know, if you can snag that, congrats to you as well. I think you took me to the woodshed. we didn't talk about that, but I should tip my hat to you at this point. So, yeah. But my point being that that's a great tandem to have, right? If you can get them.
Absolutely, right? When healthy, it's like, it's pick your poison night, right? Whoever goes in net, it's, you're facing Fleury or you're facing Leonard. It's not good for the other team, no matter which one you're picking. It's just, they are both that good.
No, it'll be tough to beat. Okay, just again, quickly back to the New York Rangers here. They did fire their coach, David Quinn, this past week as well. President GM Chris Drury will be searching for a replacement immediately. Is John Tortorella going to do a second tour of duty in New York? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know if you want Tortorella in there with all those. I just don't know if.
I would agree. And Frank Saravelli actually said this week that the New York Rangers have shown interest in Gerard Gallant. He's one of the other candidates that they're looking at. Mm-hmm. I think they got permission to talk to him. He did wonders in Vegas before he was let go there, right? So,
absolutely, yeah.
I would think if you can get him in there, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, because what he did with a team of basically just that we just got basically drafted together, right, and gelled them together, and they haven't missed like playoffs. They've made decent playoff runs every year, right? So it's
Some of the other options they were looking at or that were mentioned were Rick Tocchet, Mike Babcock, which I don't see happening. Bruce Boudreau and Claude Julien. So there's a lot of actually very talented head coaches available, right? I think Gerard Gallant sounds like he'd be a great option for the Rangers.
Gallant, I think Tocchet would too. What he's done in Dallas, what he did in Arizona with not much there, and they were perennial. They didn't get into the playoffs, but with the talent he had, he got them as close as they got to the playoffs. That's incredible for the team of talent he had to work with for as long as he was there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, moving on. Again, Frank Saravelli said that Tyson Barrie is set to test free agency after this season. As an Oilers fan, I understand that. I'm disappointed. I guess I'm conflicted, right? Because I know it would be tough to get him back based on his current value and the cap situation. What do you think, Bruce? Like, is there any way the Oilers can bring this guy back, you know, during free agency?
I think so. I think what the Oilers need to have happen is it's going to be a flat cap for a couple years, right? So is there any teams out there that need an offensive defenseman and are they willing to back up the truck for him?
Right. Well, there's always a couple, right?
Yeah. Cause they're going to take a look at some things, right? So yeah, he won defenseman scoring title this year, right? Who was he playing with? Two of the best players in the league, right? So
yeah. Yeah. One, two.
And so you look at his power play points and stuff like that. And I don't know if a lot of teams are going to look at it and say, well, yeah, he's playing with Connor and Leon. What will he be able to do that for us, right? And what are we going to pay him, right? So,
well, that'll factor into the decision for sure. And they'll look at other advanced metrics, and they'll look at secondary assists because everyone likes to look at secondary assists.
Yeah.
I really like Tyson Barrie. Like, he's been great for the Oilers. He's been good pretty much everywhere he's gone except for Toronto.
Yeah.
And you actually mentioned the other day, scoring by defensemen in Toronto is like they're in the bottom third of the league this year.
Yeah, that's
was that a Tyson Barrie problem, or is that just a byproduct of the system they play in and their coaching? Like, I don't know.
I think it's partially a byproduct of the system. So in Toronto, you're leaning on, at that time, it was Marner, Tavares, Matthews, and Nylander, right? So
yep.
You're going to give it to Morgan Riley when you've got those four guys or any of the other defensemen? It's like, probably not.
You're paying those guys $40 million to score goals, right? So
yeah. Where in Edmonton, it's like, okay, we want Barry in because we need someone to to quarterback the power play because Klefbom's gone, right? So
yep.
It took Barry a few games to find his rhythm with the group, but when he hits stride, look out, right? And you're playing with two of the best in the league. So there might be some team that backs up the truck for him, but then the other thing he has to do, so what if it's a team that isn't a perennial playoff team? Sure, they're going to give you.
Does he want to go there?
Sure, you're going to get a ton of money, but are you going to be able to get into the playoffs? Like, yeah, you get to play with Connor and Leon, right? If they do well in this playoffs, you never know. His mind could change pretty fast, and all of a sudden, that truckload of money could be, well, hey, you know what? They're in the playoffs, right? So they've got a shot at the cup if they make a deep run this year or even win. That'll get a guy thinking pretty quick. All of a sudden, money doesn't sound that bad.
No, I think he's going to that's his right. He's done so well this year. That's his right to go test free agency, see what he's worth on the open market, and make some decisions based on the offers he has in front of him. Yeah. That's no different than you and I, right? If for some reason you're looking for a job and you got to see what offers are available to you and what makes sense for you personally.
Yeah. And I think for Barry, that's been the entire plan all along. And he said that at the outset when he signed, right? I need a year to get my game back and do that. And he's done that in spades in Edmonton, right? So got his game back. He's going to check it out. And I'm pretty sure the Oilers aren't going to say no to him if he wants to come back, and it's a reasonable amount, right? So
it'll be term and dollar. And if it all makes sense for both parties, then there's no reason he won't be back, right?
Yeah.
I guess congrats to Paul Stastny. He hit 1,000 games played on Tuesday, May 11th. The Colorado Avalanche, they won their final game of the season against the Kings. They clinched the division and the President's Trophy, which I'm sure the Knights were a bit bummed about on the last game of the regular season, but such is life.
Thank COVID for that one.
Yeah.
That was a scheduled game, if I remember correctly.
I think you may be correct. So that's kind of what we had for hockey news this week, Bruce. Again, this seems like there's been lots going on the last couple of weeks here, but we're going to move on here to our quest for the Cup NHL playoffs breakdown. We're going to go division by division, matchup, and kind of give some thoughts on who we like and some of the head-to-head numbers and what that looks like. So, being that we're both Oilers fans, we're going to start with the Scotia North Division and talk about the Edmonton Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets. So first off, I referenced two sources here, MoneyPuck.com and Dom Lucician at The Athletic. And those are my references for all these matchups. But MoneyPuck has a 70.5% probability that the Oilers are going to win this series. At the time of recording here, I didn't have anything from Dom Lucician, but the head-to-head matchup this season, the Oilers did win that series 7-2. Goals for per game were 3.78 in favor of the Oilers and 2.44 goals against. In terms of special teams, the Oilers they rank first in the entire league at 28.1% of the power play. They're 10th at the PK at 82.2%. Conversely, the Jets are 6th in the league on the power play at 23.1% and 15th on the penalty kill. So, you know, on paper, it looks like this should be a bit of a cakewalk for the Oilers, right?
Oh, you would think, but it's the Oilers, so it's we can't quite say that without jinxing them. But I think the Oilers are going to win the series, but it's going to be a lot tougher than what people think. The Jets are going to play them real tough.
Yeah, like I think I had the Oilers winning this one. Actually, my pick was 5. I had them winning it in 5 games. I think I maybe changed my tune and went to 6. I'm just going to confirm that here. But I think they're going to win it in 5 or 6, but it's going to be, I think they'll be closer games, right? Like you said.
They're going to be close games. If they're not close games, there's only going to, there's one reason his name is Connor McDavid. That's going to be it, because if Connor's back in the playoffs, so we'll find out very early here what playoff Connor is like, and I hope Hellebuck's up for the challenge, because I think Connor's going to be flying.
Well, so that's the other thing I'll mention. Actually, we'll get into players and position numbers and things like that. But I had the Oilers winning this in six. I think, Bruce, you had the same thing. Was it six games?
I did.
So we're in agreement there. My expectation is that Connor and Leon are going to go supernova, kind of like they did in 2017 in the first round and a half or two rounds, right? Like, Connor is just on a mission this year, and I expect that to continue well into the playoffs. And I think they have a better team, at least on paper, than they did in 2017.
I don't know if it's a better team on paper, but
look at the numbers, like they had Benoit Pouliot, Jordan Eberle, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins playing on that second line, but they didn't put up a single goal in that Anaheim series.
No, that's true. They didn't.
Right? I mean, Benoit Pouliot was playing in your top six. So,
yeah.
You know, now, like this year, and to me anyway, the top six looks a lot better. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
Head-to-head this year, we'll get into players here. So, Connor McDavid had 22 points in 9 games against the Jets. 22 points. Followed by Leon, he had 12 points, 7 goals in 9 games played. Nugent Hopkins had 10 points, 5 goals in 8 games played. For the Jets, Scheifele only had 7 points in 9 games and 3 goals. Wheeler was 5 points, and Kyle Connor was 4 in 8 and 9 games, respectively. So, I mean, obviously, you know, advantage there. I think my biased opinion, I think, goes to the Oilers, right? You've got Connor and Leon are the two best scorers in the game this year. Yeah.
And one thing that's going to hurt Winnipeg is whether Ehlers is able to come back for this series.
Totally.
Because Ehlers loves playing the Oilers.
Yeah. And he plays them well, right?
He's like Oilers kryptonite when he plays, right? He always finds a way to get a goal or two. It's.
Yeah.
He's fast.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah. If.
He's kind of the Jets equivalent of Connor, as much as, like, in terms of speed, anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, I put advantage Edmonton for forwards. But we'll see how that shakes out. Defenseman, Darnell Nurse had 10 points in 9 games played. Barry had 9 and 9. Josh Morrissey had 5 in 9 games played. And Pionk had 4 points in 9 games played. So, you know, again, there, I think they're probably fairly even matched defensively, like if you look at their defenses. But in terms of offensive output, I'd say the Oilers take that one as well.
Yeah, Barry and Nurse are definitely more offensively inclined than Morrissey and Pionk is. But overall, I think you're right. They're defense-wise, they're pretty close to the same.
Yeah. The goaltending is where it really separates. So Mike Smith, in 5 games played, he had 4 wins, a 2.06 goals against average, and a .936 save percentage. So he was fantastic against the Jets this year. Connor Hellebuck had, in 7 games played, only had 2 wins, a 3.96 goals against average, and an .877 save percentage. Connor Hellebuck has not looked good in his last 10 or 12 games, right?
Well, not the last game, but the Oilers lit him up like a Christmas tree that one night.
And goaltending is so important, not just in the regular season, but obviously in the playoffs, just as much, if not more. So, I you know, advantage Edmonton right now. We'll see how it goes and if that actually translates. But on paper anyway, it looks like the goaltending situation is going to the Oilers. Yeah. Now, saying that, Connor Hellebuck is your Vezina Trophy winner from last season.
Yeah,
if he does figure it out, and it is a new season, right? The playoffs are a whole different animal. So it'll be really interesting to see that goaltending matchup.
It'll come down to whether they can stop Connor. If they can stop Connor, then they've got a great shot at winning. They can't stop Connor, they have no chance at winning.
Well, and special teams will come into effect, right? Like it seems to be in the postseason, the refs put their whistles away, right? A lot of those guys just swallow their whistle. And if that's the case, you know, it advantage Winnipeg because the Oilers have a better power play and a better penalty kill. So if it's going to be 5-on-5, it's going to be really, really close. And that could be the equalizer in the series.
Definitely.
So I'm curious to see how it shakes out. I do think the Oilers will find a way to pull this one out. I just don't think Connor's going to be denied this year. Some other things to keep an eye on. This matchup could come down to the offensive performance of Nugent Hopkins, Jesse Puljujärvi, and Kyler Yamamoto. If those guys can figure, like, Yamamoto's been so cold, right? I think he's actually sat the last two games as well. Pierre-Luc Dubois, I think they said he was injured. He might just be nicked up. I don't know how serious it is. But if he can actually do something in this series, and I'll be curious to see the matchup between Connor McDavid and Neil Pionk, because I know he was kind of a pain in the ass for Connor this year.
Yeah. Yes, he was.
So, I know. What do you think, Bruce? Any other players or matchups you're kind of keeping an eye on?
I'm just going to be curious to see how Winnipeg's top six go into this, right? Because in the regular season, they really couldn't seem to generate much against the Oilers. Yeah. Sans Ehlers, right? But Ehlers is hurt, and after that, they couldn't really do a whole lot against Edmonton. So it's they gotta find their way, right? Because if, like you said, Connor's on a mission this year. If Connor's going to put up seven games, so if he puts up, let's say the series goes seven, and Connor puts up 22 points, it's somebody on Winnipeg side's gotta put the puck up in the net, or like I said, it's not going to be pretty for Winnipeg.
No. All right, so that series starts Wednesday night, I believe, the 19th.
Yes, that's right.
So you know where you'll find me on Wednesday night.
Me too. I'll be watching too.
Yes, sir. All right, moving on. Next, we've got the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens. Again, I didn't have any numbers here from Dom Lucician at The Athletic. I'm assuming just because it didn't start until next week, he didn't put out his report there, his preview. But MoneyPuck.com has Toronto pegged at a 74.6% probability to win this series. The head-to-head matchup this season, the Leafs won that season series 7-2-1. Goals for per game was 3.40, goals against 2.50 in favor of the Leafs. They've got the advantage on the power play where they are 16th, 20.3%. Montreal, though, has the advantage on the PK, but they're only ranked 22nd at 78.5%. So, I mean, both of these teams, I guess, sort of have average or you know, substandard special teams. So the matchup might really just come down to 5-on-5 play. What do you think?
I think so, because as the Leafs' own media says, their power play is nothing special. And considering the people that are on that power play should be special. Like, it's
shocking, actually.
You look at the only other team, other two teams maybe that could do something would be Colorado, Boston, with the talent they've gone on it. Like,
yeah,
Toronto should be up there. And for the fact that they have the 16th ranked power play, that's bad, I would say, for those guys. But
yeah, I'd be doing some digging to find out why, but it's not my job.
Exactly.
Looking at the forwards here, I think just based on what you said there, Bruce, the advantage is going to go to Toronto here. In the matchup, the season-long matchup, Austin Matthews had 14 points in 10 games played. Marner had 11 points in 10 games played. Tavares had 10 and 10. Nylander was 7 and 8 games played. And then you look at, you know, for Montreal, it was 7 points for Toffoli in 10 games played. Tatar had 5 points in 7 games, and Suzuki had 8 points in 10 games played. So, you know, not bad, but it still advantage Leafs. They've just got elite talent at the forward position. But one player I will be interested to see, though, is Cole Caulfield, and if he actually does make his way into the lineup. I don't know. Did you see on Twitter they actually had him skating as a healthy scratch in practice, or as a?
Oh, really?
And the quote I saw on Twitter was Dominic Ducharme said something about we don't need goals. Not, I think he didn't say we don't need goal scoring, but he said we need experience, basically. So he said because, you know, he's a rookie, we're not going to play him, basically.
Oh, wow.
So I mean, just based on his play, there's no reason Cole Caulfield shouldn't be playing. But I guess if you're going to have Gallagher back, you know, that takes away one right wing position.
Yeah.
But man, oh man.
Oh yeah. If Gallagher's back, I could see them sitting Caulfield for Gallagher. Absolutely.
Right. Like I get that. I understand it. But you'd think you'd make, you make it work somehow. Even dress him as a 13th forward. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I guess, well, I guess we'll see, right? So, I don't think Jonathan Drouin is back, so.
No.
I don't know if he's back for the playoffs or not, so.
I haven't heard anything. Not since they said he took a leave of absence.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't heard anything that he's back, so. But, yeah, I'd be playing Caulfield.
Yeah. But, I guess, you know what? You and I, we're not NHL head coaches. We're just a couple of schmucks on a podcast, so.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, moving on to defenseman here. Morgan Rielly had 7 points in 10 games played in that season-long matchup. Jake Muzzin had 8 points in 10 games played. For the Canadians, you got Jeff Petrie. He was a point-a-game player. He had 10 points in 10 games played. Shea Weber only had 2 points in 7 games played. I know he had some injury troubles this year, so that could have been part of the issue. But I said this was kind of a draw, right? Because you've got two really good defensemen in Morgan Rielly and Jake Muzzin. But, you know, if you look at Montreal, they've got a big, heavy defense, right? Like, Petrie and Weber are both big bodies. Ben Chiarot's a big, heavy defenseman.
Romanoff's another big defenseman.
Yep. And we saw how they played the Oilers, you know, in a few games this year, right?
It
was playoff hockey, and it got big and nasty. And I think because of that, I'm kind of saying it's a draw. But what do you think?
Yeah, it's going to become close. Well, as we get to our picks here at the end, you'll see a little bit more, right? It's going to be a tough series for both teams. And I think it's going to come down to goaltending in the end. And I think Montreal is going to be ahead of Toronto when it comes down to the goaltending at the end.
See, and this is okay. So yeah, let's get into goaltending here. And I guess this is probably why you and I differ in our picks for this series, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Like, I look at this and I go, okay, Jack Campbell. I think I just saw today that he's actually starting the first game of the series.
Yes.
In the season-long matchup, he had 6 games played, 4 wins, a 2.16 goals against average, and a .918 save percentage. So he was pretty good, right? Like, that. Those are good, solid numbers.
Yeah.
Freddie Anderson, 4 games played, 3 wins, 2.73 goals against average, and a .912 save percentage. So you can see why Jack Campbell's starting the season or the series. Conversely, let's look at the Habs. So you got Carey Price. He had 4 games played. He only had 1 win, a 3.48 goals against average, and an .868 save percentage. And Jake Allen had 2 wins in 6 games, a 2.66 and a .907 save percentage. So, like, for me, I'm saying advantage Toronto. But when you've got a guy like Carey Price in that, I don't fault you for leaning that way either, right? So, you know, what do you think? What do you see happening with that goaltending matchup?
So I've hinged my pick on Montreal's defense and their goaltending. So I think that the defense is going to be able to slow down Matthews and Marner and keep them tied up the way they did Connor and Leon. And if they do get through, I think Price and Allen, both of them have playoff experience. Campbell doesn't have playoff experience. And Campbell had that really good stretch there during the season where he set that record for the Leafs. But since then, he's been shaky. And anyone else behind, and granted, Anderson has been hurt for quite a while. He hasn't looked all that solid in the games that he's played either, right? So,
that's
where I think if Montreal can get on him, I think Montreal can win this series. But it's got to be tight. If Marner and Matthews, and if they get open, it's going to be ugly for Montreal. But I think they can keep it tight, and I think they can pull it out.
Well, so I guess we'll just mention, so your picks, Bruce, you've got the Canadians winning this one in 7 games.
Yep.
And I had the Leafs winning this one in 6. We'll see what happens. All valid points by you, Bruce. Like, I'm kind of thinking maybe Jack Campbell will have a breakout postseason, kind of like some of the guys in the past, like Jordan Binnington did a couple years ago, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I see this going, because I think in Campbell's mind, he knows Freddie Anderson's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, right?
That position in the Leafs is there for the taking. If Campbell can have a good showing here in the playoffs, Freddie Anderson's looking for a new team after the playoffs are over. So, for Campbell, if he can solid and pull and backstop them to a playoff series win, it's something Anderson hasn't done.
Yep. And that's right. Yeah. They've struggled with Anderson, right? The past couple of playoffs.
Yeah.
One of the things I did want to mention, like we saw last year in the bubble with the Canadians, like they took the Pittsburgh Penguins out. Right. And that was, that was not expected at all. So it's not unrealistic to think that the Canadians could win this one in seven games.
Yeah,
for sure.
Imagine what would happen in Toronto if they did win in seven games or win the series. Those players leave the country fast. It'll be ugly in Toronto if Montreal does manage to win the series.
Yeah, it sure will. Some players to watch in that series too. I think I want to see how John Tavares does. Like we know Marner's going to be good. We know Matthews is going to be good.
Yeah.
Nylander, you know, for the most part has been really good. I think if Tavares can have himself a series, that could be a tipping point. And I think that fourth line, at least the way they had it drawn up here recently, it was Joe Thornton, Jason Spezza, and Wayne Simmons on their fourth line in Toronto.
That's a hell of a fourth line.
You know,
like even at their ages, that's a hell of a fourth line.
In 2008, that was probably your first line, right? But
yeah. But still, there's a reason why they're all still playing. They can still play. So
It'll be, and actually Spezza's had a good season. So I think, and that could be a tipping point for Toronto as well. I don't even know. Let's take a look. What does Montreal's fourth line look like right now? They are rolling with Alex Belzile, Michael Frolik, and Jesse Ilonen. Yeah, so like, I'd say they win that fourth line match up there, but we'll see how that goes. As you know, Bruce, I'm not a huge fan of the Leafs, so we should probably move on from this series before I get sick.
Sounds
now good. We're going to move on to the Honda West division matchups here. So first up is the Colorado Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues. According to MoneyPuck.com, they gave Colorado an 84% probability to win. And then Dom Lecician came out shortly after and actually gave Colorado an 88% probability to win. So I can't imagine Blues fans are too happy about those predictions, but it'd be very interesting to see. I know not everybody believes in analytics and whatever, but interesting to see. In the head-to-head matchup, Colorado won that season series 5-3. They had a goals for of 3.25 and a goals against average, goals against per game of 2.63. Colorado's power play ranks eighth at 22.7%. Their penalty kill is also eighth at 83.1%. The Blues, they're sixth. Their power play is sixth, actually, which is, I wouldn't have guessed that, 23.2%. Their PK is 25th at 77.8%. So special teams, you know, it's kind of a wash, I guess. We'll see how that shakes out. What are your thoughts on this series, Bruce?
I've got Colorado to mop the floor basically with St. Louis, but we'll see. The last five or six games of the season, they made a mess of Minnesota, and they made a mess of a few teams here at the end of the season. So we could see, right? So it depends which St. Louis Blues show up, right? And they're already down their leading scorer. David Perron's on the COVID list as of this recording. So,
yes, I forgot to mention that in our news. That's unfortunate for them.
So that's a big hit for them, right? So if he is a false positive and he can pass, and get back into the lineup before the series starts, that would be big for St. Louis. It'd be a big hole for them to fill if he's not.
Yeah, well, he was actually just over a point per game this season. And I think he was one of only a handful of Blues to actually do that. Or he might have been the first one to do it. I can't remember. But regardless, like, big loss for them if he's out.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you've got the Avs wiping the floor with them. I said it was going to be 4-1. I think we were on the same page with that, right, Bruce?
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes. Just some player stats quickly. Nathan MacKinnon had 14 points in 8 games played against the Blues this year. Randon had 4 points in 5 games played. Landeskog, 9 points in 8 games played. Perron was 7 points in 8 games. Ryan O'Reilly was 7 points in 8 games. And Shen was 5 points in 8 games. I said advantage Colorado just based on pure elite offensive talent. Like when you've got MacKinnon and Rantanen playing against you, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to win that matchup.
Not really, no.
So moving on from that, defenseman, Cale Makar, 10 points in 9 games played against the Blues. Samuel Girard, 3 points in 8 games played. For the Blues, Torey Krug had 5 points in 8 games played. And Justin Falk only had 1 point in 8 games played. So again, I had advantage Colorado. You know, Cale Makar, he's going to get serious Norris consideration this year, right, Bruce?
I sure hope so.
Yeah. And Sammy Girard, when Makar was hurt at certain points throughout the season, really stepped up and he's played well too. So
they've got a solid young defense in Colorado.
Yeah. And that's not even to mention Bowen Byram, who's still kind of waiting for his chance to really get some solid ice time, right?
Yeah.
So good looking team. Kind of moving on to our goalie matchups here. Philip Grubauer, 3 games played, 2 wins, 1.68 goals against average, and a .938 save percentage. He's had some injury troubles this year, but he's back and he's healthy now. And I think he could be a difference maker in this series, regardless of everything else. Jordan Binnington, 7 games played, had 3 wins, a 2.89 goals against average, and a .909 save percentage. So kind of average numbers for Binnington, but I don't think it's going to make a difference how the regular season went necessarily, but those are your numbers. Some players to watch here too, at least for me. I think Burakovsky, be interesting to see how he does. And Nazem Kadri. He had a terrible regular season, right? Like, he, by his standards, was not very good.
Yeah.
We'll be curious to see how he does. And then for the Blues, you know, Mike Hoffman, will he be effective or not? And Tarasenko, you know, be curious to see if he does as well.
Yeah, because St. Louis has got, they've got balance, right, to their lines, but they don't always seem to be in sync.
No.
The team on paper should be a lot better on ice than they show, right?
Oh, like, I totally agree.
Like, on paper, you would think this would be a 7-game series and all bets are off who's going to win, right? But when you look at the actual on-ice product, there's a reason why I've got Colorado to mop the floor with them. It's...
Yep. Yep.
So
I think most people do, right? Like, this was the most lopsided in terms of playoff predictions when looking at those two models. Nobody else was even close. There was a lot of 60-40 splits, 70-30, but you know, it was basically 90-10 is what these guys are saying
pretty close to that, right? So
yeah,
it depends. And maybe St. Louis will use that as some motivation, but...
Well, they could. I mean, this is a team that won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next matchup here, we got the Golden Knights and the Minnesota Wild. So again, based on MoneyPuck.com and Dom Lucian at the Athletic, or Lucian. MoneyPuck had Vegas at a 61% probability to win. Dom had them at a 62.2% probability. So both guys saying, you know, this is Vegas' series to lose, which is funny, right? This one is kind of a conundrum, this series, to me. Where, you know, Minnesota actually won the season series 5-1-2. Mm-hmm. So in 8 games played, they won 5 and they lost twice in overtime. Like,
yeah,
I actually initially said Vegas is going to crush these guys. Like, it's going to be kind of Colorado St. Louis 2.0. And then when I really dug into it and looked at the numbers, I went, holy crap, like, this could actually go 7 games or Vegas might lose this series.
Yeah. I think the series will go 7, but it's I've got the Wild to win this one in 7, and I like Vegas, but just the way Minnesota plays them, they've been their kryptonite all season long. Yeah, like Marc-Andre Fleury had to stand on his head today to keep, like, he absolutely robbed Kaprizov with that behind the back save, like, and Kaprizov made a hell of a move to get to where he was, and Fleury took away what should have been, in most case, pretty much any other goalie in the league. That's a goal, but not for Marc-Andre Fleury, right? So it's this is what we're going to be treated to for the next 6 games. It's
it's
going to be awesome.
It's going to be a good series to watch. I've got the Knights winning this in 7. It's going to be a close series, like you said.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot closer, I think, than what a lot of people think.
Yeah. Well, if you've been paying attention, or like I said, if you did some research and actually looked at the numbers, like, Vegas has really struggled with the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
We'll go through some player numbers here. I guess team numbers. So Vegas against the Wild had a goals for per game of 3 and a goals against per game of 3. So, you know, fairly even there. Vegas does win the special teams matchup, though. Their power play is ranked 22nd, but Minnesota's is ranked 24th. The PK, actually, Vegas has the top ranked power penalty kill in the league at 86.8%. So that could be advantage Vegas here at some point during the series. In terms of player production, Mark Stone had 10 points in 7 games played. Pacioretty 4 and 6. Marchessault 3 and 8, which is surprising. Kaprizov had 8 points, 6 goals in 8 games played. Fiala had 5 points in 7, and Zuccarello had 2 and 7. So, you know, not a whole lot to get excited about there. Defenseman, you know, sorry, quickly, I think I said advantage Vegas, but Bruce, you might feel differently. What do you think?
I think offensively they're pretty balanced, right? And I probably should mention too that Pacioretty didn't play in game 1.
Yes.
So he's still injured, right? So, but it just shows, like, when you look at the points, like even those 6 players, right? It's balanced, right? It's practically balanced on both sides. So it's
Don't disagree.
It's gonna be fun, right? It's, and like when you get down to the defensemen here and you look at the defense for both teams, Minnesota's defense is no pushover. There's a solid group of 6 guys back there, and the same for Vegas, right? It's,
well, for Minnesota, like, you've got Spurgeon, Brodin, Dumba, and Ryan Suter still, right? Like, those are all, that's a great top 4.
Mm-hmm.
And for Vegas, like, to Shea Theodore and Alex Pietrangelo on the same team is a little bit ridiculous in terms of defensemen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the goalie matchup. So I think even like Talbot won today, you know, he had the shutout, but I would still say, at least on paper, you have to give this to Fleury and to Leonard in terms of the goalie matchup, right?
Cool. They're the Jennings Trophy winners, right? So, but Cam Talbot, I think, is on a mission. He's he wants to get out there and he wants to prove that he can, back to the form that he was in, was 2017 with the Oilers, right?
Yep. That's right.
He wants to show that he can hang with the big boys, and he did today.
Yep.
Him and Fleury were trading haymakers all game long.
It was fun to watch.
You bet.
All right. So that should be, keep an eye on that series. We'll report back on it later. Moving on to the Mass Mutual East Division matchups. So Pittsburgh and the Islanders, obviously today the Islanders took the first game of the series. Moneypuck.com has Pittsburgh at a 67.6% probability to win. The Athletic, Domestician, has Pittsburgh at a 56.7% probability to win. And Pittsburgh won that season series pretty handily, 6-2. So a little bit surprising to see Pittsburgh go down today, but you know what? The Islanders play a very tight defensive structure, and you know, we really shouldn't be surprised to see them win either, especially when you look at, in that East division, this is probably the toughest division to kind of predict, because those top 4 teams are only separated by, I think it was 6 points.
Yeah, it's not much. It's a tight division, right? So,
yeah.
And look at it. It's a division where the Rangers missed the playoffs, but yet you put them in any other division, they're well seated in the playoffs. So it's
very, very
one tough division.
Pittsburgh, you know, goals for per game had 3.25, goals against per game 2.38. They did have the better power play. They were ranked 4th in the regular season at 23.7%, whereas the Islanders were 21st. The Islanders do have the advantage on the PK, though, where they are ranked 6th at 83.7%. So, again, special teams would be a bit of a wash here, I think. And really, there's fewer penalties called in the playoffs anyway. So, looking at the forward matchup, like, I don't see how you cannot give it to Pittsburgh. You've got Crosby, Malkin, Gensel, Rust. Like, you know what I mean?
On paper, it's an offensive mismatch if I've ever seen one. Like, it's
right. Yeah.
Like, you look at all the you look at all the firepower and stuff that Pittsburgh has got, right? And then they went out and got Jeff Carter, right? Who looks all of a sudden looks like a very young Jeff Carter again, right? So he looks like. So it's offensively, it's a mismatch, right? But
Well, and even Jared McCann, right? That's another guy we should mention is Jared McCann, because he had a really good year filling in for Evgeny Malkin when he was out this year.
Yeah.
So lots of depth at forward for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I won't get into all the numbers on this one, but yeah, I think they've got the advantage there. Defenseman, I think I kind of put it as a bit of a draw because the Pittsburgh Penguins don't have a lot of depth beyond Chris Letang, right? Like can you name their top six really? Like, you know, they've got Dumoulin and a couple of the guys that will have an impact, but
yeah,
particularly in terms of offensive output, it's Chris Letang and then everybody else. And you know, you look over at the Islanders, they've got Nick Leddy, Ryan Pulock, Noah Dobson. They got a few guys, but again, not elite defensemen.
And not a lot of point production there either, right?
No, not a whole lot to get excited about. The goalie matchup here, I'd say on paper anyway, you'd give it to Varlamov just based on the fact that he led the league or paced the league in shutouts. But when you look at the head-to-head matchup, Tristan Jarry had 6 games played, 5 wins, a 2.41 goals against average, and a .917 save percentage. Varlamov only had 1 win in 7 games played against the Pittsburgh Penguins this year. And he had a 2.86 goals against average and an .897 save percentage. So he didn't play well against the Penguins. Against everybody else, though, he was a dominant goaltender, like top 2 or 3 this year. So I don't know. I kind of put it as a bit of a draw. Like Varlamov should be the clear-cut winner here, but he was not against the Penguins. What do you think? No.
Yeah, I think if the Penguins do have a weakness, it's a goaltending, right? So, and Varlamov has looked human against these guys, right? So,
yeah.
Although the young kid put up a hell of a performance today,
I was just going to say, like, we're talking about Varlamov, but he didn't play today. It was Sorokin, right? So,
yeah.
The other thing, as I was watching the game today, the Penguins and the Islanders, Tristan Jarry, he looked bad. Like, it seems like they figured out his glove hand, right? That seems to be his weakness. He's almost like Koskinen, where if he can get a shot glove high, like he's not going to. Now, one or two of those shots he let in today were nice shots, but there was some I kind of went, well, you know, he maybe wants that one back. So, yeah, that should be fun to watch that series.
Both teams are very defensively sound, right? That's been the Islanders' staple now for basically 3 seasons, right? It's their defensive structure, and if they can make you make a mistake, that's where they get their offensive production, right? So they're not going to be running and gunning like you look at some teams like Toronto or even Edmonton, right? Or Colorado, right? They're not going to be able to run and gun and trade chances that way. They've got to play solid defense, right? So,
well, that's kind of what happens in the playoffs, right? You sit back and you play defense, you wait for your chances, and you capitalize when you can.
Yeah. So if you can get a couple, 3 goals up on them, there's a very slim chance they'd be able to come back from it because their structure just doesn't allow for it, right? So that's you can get them down a goal or two, it's advantage for the advantage of Pittsburgh, right?
Well, and so with that, I guess we both got Pittsburgh winning this series ultimately in 7 games.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough series for both teams. First game went to overtime, right? I think we're going to see a lot more of that from these two teams. I would agree.
Yep. All right, moving on. The next matchup here, we've got the Capitals and the Bruins. Money Puck has the Capitals at a 55.9% probability to win, while Dom Lecicien at the Athletic has Boston pegged at a 64.2% probability to win. So interesting to see that those guys had some difference of opinion on that matchup. Just right away, I'm like, I had Boston picked as the winner in the series in 6 games.
Yeah.
Are you 6 games as well, Bruce? Yeah.
No, I said 7. I think 7, it's going to go 7. But I still think Boston's going to win it in 7, but.
Well, and they did win the season series, right? So they were 4-2-2 against Washington this year. Boston had a 3.25 goals for per game against the Capitals and a 3.13 goals against. Special teams, again, it's kind of a wash where, you know, Boston's got the better penalty kill. They're ranked 2nd in the league at 86%. The Caps, they've got the better power play, ranked 3rd at 24.8%. So, again, we all know what the power play in Washington's about, right? It's just Ovi standing in the corner waiting for that one timer.
Just wait for Carlson to feed Ovi. That's the power play for them.
Yeah.
And so, it works really well.
It works. That's kind of the funny part, right? Everybody knows that's the plan, but they still can't stop that shot.
Can't stop them.
So that special teams, again, probably wash. You know, the forwards, I said advantage Boston just based on the, like, they've now got depth in their top six, right? So bringing in Taylor Hall, like, you've got Marchand, Pasternak, Bergeron playing on that top line, but then you've got Hall, Krejci, and Smith and on the second line.
Yeah.
And I think those, that top six accounted for something like 68% of Boston's production down the stretch here.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
So, but now conversely, you look at Washington, I mean, Ovechkin's phenomenal. Backstrom, Oshie, Tom Wilson. Like, they've got skill in the top six too, so they're no slouch either.
Yeah.
So you might be able to just say it's a draw, but I think, you know, Brad Marchand was top three in scoring this year. And Pasternak is, he's always in that Rocket Richard conversation every year with Ovi and Matthews, right?
Yeah. Had Pasternak not had the later start because of his surgery, he would have been right up there as well.
Yeah, he is every year, right? He's a goal scorer. So, yeah, not much to say there. Defenseman, I said advantage Washington. Like, you've got Carlson, John Carlson, Justin Schultz, and Dmitry Orlov against McAvoy and Grzelcyk. Yeah, John Carlson.
Yeah,
he almost won the Norris last year, right? I actually thought he should have, but what do I know?
Yeah, no, defense corps for Washington is, and they're a little older too, right? They got a little more experience than what Boston's got right now. So,
well, and I didn't even mention Chara, right?
Yeah, Chara's playing for Washington.
So, you know, that's kind of an interesting storyline we probably should mention, but old father time over there.
That little nightmare. It's like you've been playing with this guy and now all of a sudden you got to play against him in the playoffs.
And he's still just like a mean, massive human being.
I know.
All right, going on to the goalie matchup here. This one, to me, it's advantage Boston, and really it shouldn't be close. But Tuukka Rask this year against the Capitals was not very good. Seven games played, he had two wins, a 3.96 goals against average, and an 877 save percentage. Meanwhile, Vitek Vanacek in five games had four wins, a 2.06 goals against average, and a 936 save percentage. Vanacek was injured in game one. We don't know the severity yet. Craig Anderson came in relief. I think, at least on paper, it should be Boston, right? You've got Tuukka Rask and you've got Jeremy Swayman, who was great this year, right? Like, I think he had something like a 930 save percentage in the games.
He was outstanding, right, when he was in net. Yeah, I give the goaltending advantage to Boston. Rask's experience, right?
And if he does falter, you've got Swayman there too. So
yeah.
And if those two don't do well, you've still got Halak sitting there.
Yeah. No, definitely give the advantage to him because, you look at this. So Vanacek gets hurt. Anderson's playing. Samsonov, I think, is still in the doghouse.
Yep.
I don't know if him and Kuznetsov, I don't know if they're going to get out of the doghouse. So,
I think you and I talked about that last week, right? I don't know if it was on the pod or not, but Kuznetsov, he's just kind of in the doghouse in Washington right now in general.
Yeah. Well, he's off COVID. He's off the COVID list now. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's been a weird couple of weeks for those two players in Washington. So, and they were kind of disjointed coming into the playoffs too, where Boston seemed to be finding their rhythm. So,
yep.
But it's going to be a tough series for these guys. So for both teams.
And I think quite often, like, how your performance at the end of the regular season going into the playoffs will dictate how you do in the playoffs, right? If you're if you're hot down the stretch, a lot of times that'll continue, and that's been the case for Boston. So it will be interesting. Although, of course, like we said, they lost game one. So
yeah.
But these series can be long.
Yes, they can be. And you never underestimate players like TJ Oshie and Oh God, I lost my train of thought.
That's right. Actually, you know, talking about TJ Oshie, it was really cool that he had the assist, the primary assist on that game winning goal by Nick Dowd, right? Like,
yeah.
So just the last couple of weeks for him, right? His dad passes away. He scores the hat trick in his first game back. And then of course he gets the primary assist on the overtime winner in game one of the playoffs. So lots of emotions running for that guy, I'm sure.
Yeah. He's a heck of a playoff performer when he plays.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. Like he's just I think he was their second leading scorer this year. He's just a really good hockey player. Like he'll be a factor for them in this series for sure.
Yeah.
Moving on to the Discover Central Division matchups, we've got Carolina and Nashville. Money Puck had these guys, Carolina at a 65.2% probability to win. The Athletic had Carolina at a 65.2% probability to win. That's either a typo or they felt exactly the same. Either way, I know that they both had Carolina pegged to win this series. Carolina did win the season series matchup 6-2. Their goals for per game was at 3, and their goals against was 2.13. They did completely win the special teams matchup here. So the power play is ranked second overall at 25.6%, just behind the Oilers. The PK is ranked third at 85.2%. So assuming there are, you know, some power plays coming their way, or if they have to kill some penalties, they've got the advantage there. I said advantage. If at the forward position, I think they've got the advantage too, Bruce, right?
I think so. I was trying to figure out whether I should actually, in my pick, whether I should actually give Nashville a win or not. So I look at the probability to win, and I'm like, I just can't see the series being that close. Nashville made such a huge push to get into the playoffs. I think Carolina is just going to steamroll them.
I think the one glimmer of hope for Nashville is going to be goaltending, because UC Saros, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but
yeah,
UC Saros in four games played actually against Carolina, he wasn't great. Like, he had one win, a 2.73 goals against, and a 9.17 save percentage. However, since April 1st, UC Saros has went 11-5-1 with a 2.21 goals against average and a 9.30 save percentage. So in 17 games played, he had a 9.30 save percentage since April 1st. Now, again, we just said, like, how guys play down the stretch can sometimes dictate how the playoffs go for them.
Yeah.
If he can maintain that level of play, you know, if he's at a 9.30 save percentage, he's going to at least give Nashville a chance. I still agree with you 1,000%. Like, this is Carolina's series to lose. We both agreed on five games, right? Like, I don't think it'll be a sweep, but
I finally decided to give Nashville one game, because that was a tough decision for me whether Nashville was going to win one or none. I figured I'll give them one.
Yeah,
I don't expect this series, and I'll be honest, I don't expect this to be a pretty series for Nashville. I think they burnt everything they had to get into the playoffs, and I think that the big steamroller that is Carolina is just going to run them right over.
Well, and they've got great goaltending too, right? Like, Mrazek has been pretty solid all year. Nedeljkovic, we've talked about him lots on the show, right?
Yeah.
In three games against Nashville, he had two wins, a 1.64 goals against average, and a 9.38 save percentage. So he's looked really good against Nashville. And they've got a lot of elite-level talent, both at forward and on defense. You know, Dougie Hamilton was one of the top-rated defensemen in the league this year in terms of offensive output.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian Aho, Teravainen, Svechnikov, Trocheck, like all those guys had great seasons. And really, Nashville's coming back with, you know, Forsberg, Granlund, and Tolvanen, because Duchesne and Johansson have just been kind of invisible this year, right?
Carolina's just going to come at you in waves. It's like, if it isn't the first line, it's the second line, it's the third line, it's... I got three lines that can put the puck in the net, and that's scary. Yeah, no,
they're gonna go a ways. I think we'll get to the overall bracket shortly here, but I've got them going a fair ways in the playoffs. I think this is our last matchup here. So last but definitely not least, especially after tonight's game, the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Money Puck had Florida as a 60.4% probability to win. The Athletic had Tampa Bay at a 57% probability to win. So So again, difference of opinion there. Florida did win the season series 5-2-1, so quite handily, actually. I'll let you, like, what do you think, Bruce? I think we both had Florida winning this series, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a hard-fought series, but I think Florida's going to pull it out. It's going to be a slugfest.
Well, again, we saw it tonight. It was intense, right? Yeah. There's a lot of intensity in that game. I guess for me, like I still think Florida will win this series, but seeing how Kucherov played tonight, right?
That which surprised me, considering for a guy that was supposed to be hurt,
he's on his deathbed.
Depending on who you were, which reports you were listening to, right? And he came out and played like he hasn't missed a step. Like it's like he'd been playing all season long.
I thought about it, this series, it hinged on the health of Stamkos, Kucherov, and the performance of some other guys like Point. But
yeah,
I don't know. And Braden Point tonight, 2 goals.
Yeah. Right? Dagger with just over a minute left in the game, right?
I don't know if their top guns keep going like that. Maybe it won't go seven, right? Maybe Tampa's just gonna. But anyway, Florida is playing so well.
It's gonna be another hot, hard fought series. It's kind of, and once these guys are done fighting, so let's say for argument's sake that Florida and Tampa go to seven games. Who does the winner get? Most likely, Carolina.
Yeah. And Carolina's left steamroll.
Whoever left of these two teams gets Carolina.
After an easy series against Nashville, right? Like,
yeah, it's. Well, I'm assuming it's going to be an easy series against Nashville.
What should be an easy series anyway? Yeah.
But yeah, it's the Battle of Florida. It's gonna be fun. It'll be fun to watch.
But, you know, I initially kind of said advantage Florida for forwards, but I think, you know, based on tonight, what we saw from Kucherov, Stamkos, Point, like it's probably just a wash, right? Like Barkov and Huberto have had fantastic seasons. They're amazing players, but there's a lot of talent on that Tampa Bay team. Defensively, I think, you know, like to have a guy like Victor Hedman and then Mikhail Sergachev and Ryan McDonagh, and David Savard. You probably give defense the Tampa Bay Lightning the advantage there.
Yeah, well, Florida's down Ekblad, right? So,
yeah,
they brought in Montour to fill in the space, right? But
yeah,
Ekblad's tough to replace. But give Montour credit; he stepped in and he's playing his part. He's playing serious time and he's doing well
for sure. And then I guess in terms of goaltenders, I'm just going to give advantage to Vasilevsky here, right? We'd mentioned at the top of the show, like that's not much to be said there.
It's pretty hard not to pick. Yeah, he's the top goaltender, right? So,
yeah. All right. So with that, Bruce, I guess we'll just touch on briefly our FHH League or NHL Bracket Challenge. So my picks, I had Edmonton in 6 games, Toronto in 6 games. Pittsburgh in 7, Boston in 6, Florida in 7, Carolina in 5, Vegas in 7, and Colorado in 5. And then, Bruce, go ahead with your picks.
So I had Oilers in 6, the Canadiens in 7, Penguins in 7, the Bruins in 7, lots of 7s there, the Avs in 5, the Wild in 6. It was supposed to be 7, but I goofed on that one. Hurricanes in 5, and I had the Panthers in 6, but I'm thinking it might take to game 7 after watching tonight's game. So we'll see what happens there.
All right. And then I guess too, like I didn't mention in the notes here, but I have Edmonton, Colorado facing off in the one semifinal and Pittsburgh and Carolina facing off in the other. Ultimately, I had Pittsburgh and Edmonton in the final. And I was explaining to John actually before the show, so my dream scenario is seeing Sidney Crosby play Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup final and sort of that symbolic passing of the torch from, you know, maybe the previous generation's greatest player to now Connor McDavid taking that torch officially, and just, he's now the guy. And it kind of brought back memories of like 08, 09, right? When the Red Wings were the team to beat. And then this young team in Pittsburgh came up and they lost that first final, but they came back in 09 and won the second one. And so it would just be a really cool storyline. Is it plausible? Probably not, but I'm going with it. Bruce, who did you have kind of in your semis and in your Stanley Cup final?
I'm just trying to find it now because I got an email from the NHL saying NHL.com saying they didn't like my semifinal pick. So I was just trying to find my picture that I took of it here, but I can't find my picture of it now all of a sudden. I got a picture of the email from them saying that they didn't like my pick.
Well, I guess if you don't remember, you can't get it. Do you remember who you picked as your Stanley Cup winner?
Carolina. I had Carolina in, it was, I think, 7 games. It was Colorado.
Okay.
Give me a second here. I'll try and find it again quickly.
I'm trying to think who, it might have been The Athletic. They released something about their experts panel. And there was a lot of Colorado over the Hurricanes in the final or vice versa. But those seem to be sort of the hot picks right now is the Hurricanes and the Avalanche.
I'm a big fan of Carolina. Just they're built well. They've got a great defense. They've got, like I said, it's their offense is just going to come at you in waves, right? So they've got Aho, Teravainen. You've got Niederreiter. You've got
Svechnikov.
You've got
Martin Nietzsche.
That's it. That was the player I was looking for. It's.
They'll be tough for anyone to beat. Doesn't matter if it's Colorado, Vegas, hopefully Edmonton, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough out for them.
Yeah. Okay. So I had in semifinals, I had Edmonton, Colorado, and then in the East, it was Boston, Carolina. And then I had Carolina beating Colorado in the final.
I would say your bracket is more likely to play out than mine, Bruce, but I kind of went a little bit more with what I'd like to see than probably what will actually happen.
Well, we'll find out between Toronto and Montreal. I picked Montreal to win that one. So, and then if that does manage to come out, we'll see what happens between if Edmonton win theirs, Edmonton and Montreal. That could be a. That could almost very well be Montreal going into that series. And then, Montreal against Boston. There'd be a nice semifinal showdown there too, right? So
that could get rough quick, but
yeah.
There's lots of good storylines, right? Like lots of good potential matchups.
Like you look at this, right? So you've got Toronto against Montreal in the first round. Like how many of us at the beginning of the season were clamoring for that playoff series, right? And almost got a bit of a scare here where Montreal almost passed Winnipeg in the standings, right? So
yeah, that would have been disappointing for so many people, right? Like people, like you said, have been clamoring for that matchup. And
yeah,
I heard it somewhere this week. That matchup hasn't occurred since 1979.
Yeah.
That's hard to think.
And the other stat that came out of that, the winners of those, like when they've played head to head, the winners of those series have gone on to win the Stanley Cup in either direction, whether it was Toronto or Montreal.
That's right. Yep. And so I'll have you know, the Oilers, I think in every year they won the cup, beat Winnipeg. They went through Winnipeg at some point to win their cup. So my hopefully hope is if they get again. Past Winnipeg. What's that?
Hopefully it starts again.
So hopefully it starts again. That's like fingers crossed. But anyway, anything else, Bruce, from you in terms of playoff matchups or anything else news?
I don't have lots of coffee or lots of soft drinks because there's going to be lots of overtime. Lots of overtime. There's going to be lots of late. Well, I haven't seen the schedule for these afternoon games isn't that bad. So they start in the afternoon. At least you'll probably get to bed by 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Sure.
After the third overtime period. But
hopefully you're resting up before the playoffs.
Make sure your internet is really good so you can stream all 4 games at once because if all of them go to overtime, there is going to be lots of overlap to watch. So
all sound advice. All right. Well, Bruce, with that, I think we will sign off for the week. We're starting to get a bit long here. So, you know what, guys, listeners, anyone who's listening, please submit your picks. Like, you know, tweet us at FH Hacks on Twitter and at Fantasy Hockey Hacks on Instagram. You can also get a hold of us on the website, fantasyhockeyhacks.com. But I'd be very curious to know what everybody thinks in terms of the bracket challenge or who they've got pegged to win the Stanley Cup. And if you have any show ideas or anything you'd like us to discuss on the show, if you have questions for us, please do let us know. We're always looking for new topics and things to discuss. So with that, we'll head out and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Good night, everybody. Bruce. Good night, everyone. And take good luck on your bracket.
All right. Take care.